Recently, I had the opportunity to guest host a new podcast show that I think you're really going to like, and here's why. We all deserve a path to success, and while everyone's journey is unique, so many of us share the desire for our families to have it better than we did. That's why this new podcast called Self is bringing you real stories from people who are challenging their relationship with money to build a better future for themselves, their loved ones, and their communities. Hello, and welcome to Self, the podcast that brings you real stories from builders across the country who are challenging their relationship with money. As a retired therapist turned money mindset coach, I truly believe that reframing the way we think about money can open the doors to a better future for ourselves, our loved ones, and our communities. Being in a relationship can be beautiful and challenging at the same time. Whether you're in the beginning stages or long-term partners, navigating life together takes communication and compromise, especially when it comes to money. The way you approach finances together can and should vary depending on your upbringing, debt level, spending habits, and so much more. That's why I'm so excited to sit down with writing, comedy, and life partners Naomi Ekperigin and Andy Beckerman. Over the course of their 13 years together, they've made big career pivots, dealt with periods of unemployment, and they're currently facing what could be the ultimate trial by fire, wedding planning. Let's get into it.
We met at the UCB Improv Theater in Chelsea, Manhattan. We were put on like a one-off team together to perform. Mm. And that's where we met and became friends.
I was impressed by Naomi. She was very funny.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I didn't have a thought yet on you.
Did you even notice me?
I wasn't there trying to meet no men. I was trying not to embarrass myself on stage. Mm. That's all.
Well, mission accomplished. You were very funny. I made the mistake of moving to New York 2 weeks before the financial crisis in 2008. So I was heavily unemployed or underemployed for a while. So I had a lot of free time to G-chat with Naomi.
Yes, we would G-chat. I was at my job and I was bored out of my mind and Andy was at home and we would just talk for hours.
Yes, my routine was just exercising, doing like a little bit of yoga and then sending out 300 resumes and cover letters per day, desperate for a job so that I wouldn't have to sell more of my stuff to make rent.
Have you always wanted to do comedy and writing and be in the entertainment business, or did you have different ideas around first jobs growing up?
I think that's easy for you, Naomi. You actually did, and you were conscious of it, correct?
Yes. Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be an actor. That was first and foremost. And I, you know, growing up in New York, we would go to plays and stuff. And I remember thinking, I want to work on Broadway. I thought that was also the coolest job because also in my head, you only work 2 hours a day. I was like, okay, you perform for 2 hours a day and then you're done. I was like, well, now that's the stuff, you know? I didn't know how it was possible. Again, even the living in a city like New York, where obviously people are pursuing that, I didn't know how I would pursue it. I didn't understand how you made your way into the business, right? Like the TV felt like another world, and I didn't understand how someone got on the TV, you know? You know, for a little while, I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll kind of do stand-up, you know, like at shows, you know, bar shows and places around.
Well, you had been doing stand-up already, right? And it's just that, like, when...
But I didn't understand how you got to the professional level of it.
Right, but I always saw it for you as, like, evolution in a certain sense. Like you were already doing something and then the landscape changed. And so the thing you were already doing like made more sense in that new landscape.
Interesting.
It's Darwinian, right?
Ooh, it's Darwinian. Well, what about you though? Because you are a whole nother level. I mean, Andy was a college professor. So, I mean, how did you get here? How did this all happen?
Oh, well, that was me trying to triangulate between my parents' desires for a doctor or a lawyer. Right. I'm like second generation. So they were the first generation to go to college. And then I have to improve upon that and be a doctor or a lawyer. When I didn't, I was not aware. I was not very self-aware when I was younger. And I just knew that I kind of want to create things, but I didn't think you could do it. Again, coming from a middle-class Pennsylvania existence, there's no doors open to you. Unless by accident you know someone that works
in
entertainment.
You need to know someone. Not even just know them like to get in as much as like to know what's possible, right? If you don't see people around you doing the work, you're like, well, how does it get done?
Right. I vaguely knew that writing was a profession.
Right, 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 right.
Like, I mean, obviously, like, being an author, but, like, TV writing or film writing, I knew that it had to happen because they didn't exist. It wasn't improv, right? But, like, I didn't know how you got from not doing it to doing it. So I triangulated between my parents' desires and my own inchoate desires to, like, do comedy, whatever that meant. Again, not understanding what that meant in any kind of professional way. And so those intersected at college professor, because I was a philosophy professor, okay? I went to grad school at Temple because you have healthcare, all right? You have a paycheck that arrives regularly.
Even though it's very, very small.
Even though it's very small.
When you're an adjunct, at least.
And so that was great. That was great until it wasn't. Until it was like, this is not what I want to be doing. And I had this crisis and then moved to New York to do comedy, which is what, and finally was honest with myself. Like,
but here's,
I got to stop living my life halfway between what my parents want and what I want, because I just won't be happy. I could be happy, but I won't be fulfilled, if that makes sense.
I think that a lot of people will resonate with that because we oftentimes see the end goal. We see the vision. We see what we want at the destination, but where we are is sometimes what feels like far off from that vision. What did it feel like kind of being able to see across the water to what you wanted to have happen, but not know how to get there? What was that feeling like for each of you?
Felt like hell. It felt like death inside. Yeah, it was terrible.
For me, it was definitely depression. I definitely felt like,
oh, wow,
there is something I want for my life and I don't know how to make it happen. How do I not want it? That's what I felt. I was like, well, I just have to not want this thing so much, and I have to be satisfied with the fact that this is what it's going to be. Working at this desk and being told I'm funny, I guess, and watching TV and wishing for it. So yeah, it was really very hard. Better people would maybe be like, I was galvanized and I made a plan and I was good, you know, and there's certain people who certainly do, like, just pack up and move to LA or New York with that. But I knew I needed stability. I knew I needed a job. I knew there was no safety net. That didn't feel like the way to go either, right? Like, it really did, to me, it felt like I need to stay safe until an opportunity presents itself, because I didn't understand what it would, like, the idea of leaving it all behind and going with a bag and just hoping for the best.
Yeah, I think our lives were comfortable just enough that we weren't going to, like, move somewhere. Like, there are stand-ups who, like, yeah, I moved to Chicago and I just slept on the subway for a couple weeks. Like, I think that's Hannibal Buress's story or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? And we were comfortable just enough to, like, not want to do that.
I feel like we're secretly, like, best friends, because this is why I went to school.
I love this.
Yeah. I grew up, you know, from a family of immigrants, but, you know, it was, you have a couple of job options. You could be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, you know, finance, right? And wanting to kind of soothe or satiate my family's desire for me to have that stability and what they thought would create stability, but me knowing that was not going to fit, right? And so I was like, well, instead of music and performance, I'll go into psychology. And they're like, that still doesn't count. And really being able to say, okay, well, if I create some level of stability, then maybe I can have the foundation of a sustainable income and still go out for auditions, still, you know, do some gigs here and there, because I want to be an artist, but not the starving kind. And it sounds like y'all didn't necessarily want to be the starving kind.
Exactly. Absolutely. And also
close to starving.
No. I want to be full. I want to be full at all times. But it was, and I think it was also because, you know, I think too, because I'd gone to school with wealthy people. My mother had also, I knew what it took for her to put me in that school.
Yeah.
The idea of me graduating and then also graduating college and them just being out here struggling. You know what I mean?
Didn't fit.
Because of a dream, like, meaning struggling by choice as opposed to, you know, coming on hard times. That was just not what, that isn't what I saw for myself either. And because just as much as New York showed me, wow, like, the arts and this is what's possible, it also showed me just how many talented people are out here who don't have the opportunity.
Right.
That was the other thing too. I would go to church and I would hear people singing like, you need to be on Broadway, but no, you up in church. And that's just a fact.
Yeah.
And that is something that also stuck with me. So it was really, very hard to just say, okay, I'm going to go do the creative thing.
So then kind of seeing all the things that you both did through your childhood, as you're growing up, having your first jobs, going to college. How has your relationship with money evolved over time? And then how did that shift into, you know, you being a couple? So the evolution of your relationship with money as individuals, and then being able to create a life with another person.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about, your money?
Well, I always live very close to the bone. Again, middle class, but my parents were wonderful. I always had clothes to wear and food to eat. Great. But nothing really, not a lot beyond that. Toys, like two. Like, I'm not trying to say that.
I'm not trying to say it was a Spartan
existence, but like, I didn't have a lot of spending money.
I started working at 14 or 15?
I started working at supermarkets to earn money. But like, my parents wanted me to save that money for college. Mm-hmm. So they would give me $20 a week. And that also accounted for school lunches. So what I used to do, because I also wanted to buy a CD every week. So to afford lunch and a CD, at the time cost somewhere between $12 and $15.
Listen to this, girl.
I would eat, was it 7 rolls? My lunches a lot of times were 7 rolls, which you could get at the salad bar for 15 cents each. I think it was 7 rolls. I think that's $1.05.
This man ate 7 rolls as a full meal.
Yeah, that's $1.05.
Can we just...
With butter. There was butter on the rolls.
I need to step it out. This is a growing boy with a brain to fuel. You think some common sense. And he said, what I'm going to do?
But just many days.
Like 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Full on bread and water diet by choice.
If I wanted a CD that week, if I didn't, I would eat normally, probably. Sometimes they had chicken nuggets, and we called those double nugget days. Okay. You would get 2 lunches, so you could have more nuggets. And I just wouldn't get a CD that week. But you
really did keep it lean. 15 cents a roll. You were living a 15 cents a roll life.
Yes. Uh-huh. So I learned to live kind of lean. And in grad school, like, my stipend was nothing. Right. So like, my dinners a lot of times were like, I was vegetarian, or I am. But like, I would have fake turkey on rye bread, a side salad from a bag, and some baked lay. And then moved to New York, didn't have, had enough money for like 2 months of rent, and then had to just scramble and get whatever job I could. So I learned to live very close to the bone.
Yeah.
Not spending much money and just like living like that so I could live my dreams, let's say. And Naomi was not like that.
As a kid, I didn't spend too much money on stuff, but definitely like kind of when I got to college, my 20s, it was more like being able to go to dinner with friends, being able to go to drinks, but I had a job. I was not doing that. Like, I never asked for money, but that's why I needed to have a job so that I could go do that kind of stuff. You see what I'm saying? Like, that was very important to me, to be able to like go and hang out with my friends. And I mean, again, we weren't even going to fancy places. You know what I mean? We were doing the happy hour. We were doing the half off bottles of wine. So it's not even like we was anybody, but we were still like, we're out and about in the West Village, and we're like, we're working girls. And like, that's what it was. But because I grew up with a single mother, and because I grew up with a very strong sense of that there was more. Right? And not necessarily that I wanted it, but I was like, oh, did you know you could live in an apartment where the elevator opens up into your house?
Ooh.
You ain't know nothing about that life. And then you go and you see what's happening on Park Avenue, and you're like, oh, there's more. And it didn't mean that I wasn't happy with where I was living, but it made me feel like when I was older, I wanted to be able to have certain things. And so because of that, I always felt like I needed to have a job. I needed to have money coming in. I was always doing something. I was like, I was sign language interpreting. Then I was doing some freelance copywriting. I was still up in here babysitting. Like, I would do whatever it took to keep the income coming in.
Right.
Full stop. That was always how I was. Just something to keep me busy and able to take care of myself.
Yeah, and me too, but just enough. See, this is where the difference is, right? I always was working, but just enough to pay the bills, buy groceries.
But real simple groceries, real no simple avocado. Groceries.
No,
okay.
No avocado.
And just make
we're
a plain.
Like a handful of baby carrots.
Yeah, you have
And some toast.
And like, because when Andy and I first got together, he wasn't working. And then for a while he was temping. Like a lot of our dates weren't really dates. It was a lot of just hanging out.
Mm. Let's get a milkshake.
And then at first, I remember at one point I was nervous. I was like, you know, does he really like me or am I just the girl willing to come over and hang out? Again, not because I want a man to spend money on me. Like, I don't need that. But I think when you don't, until you know someone well, the way they show you is by an investment of their time and an investment of their money.
Mm.
And so without him really having to kind of shell out or doing it, I was like, does he actually like me or am I just like the easiest person to be with right now? And you know, you made it very clear that that wasn't the case, but I remember that kind of made me nervous. And but then, like, you got a temp gig that was kind of settled, I want to say a year and a half into our relationship. So after 2 years together, we moved in together. And so that was our first foray into obviously combining finances and seeing what's up. And, you know, and this was the thing we've always had to contend with, is like, because Andy is used to living lean. And I was like, I need you to like get some savings up in here. Okay. I need a nest egg. Like, and
you
I
can't think, survive on celery.
Exactly. I'm very.
Put that on a t-shirt. You can't survive on celery.
And then you say it with a, you can't survive on celery, girl. And then everybody in the audience laughs. And yeah! it's like, what does it even mean? But we had to learn and he had to figure out like, okay, now that we're a unit, my financial baseline is now your financial baseline.
Yeah, this was legitimately like the first year of our couples therapy, was that the baseline in a couple is different than the baseline for an individual, for whatever you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And for us, it was financially, right? As a couple, we can't live on a handful of potato chips, right? That's not it. Naomi wants real meals. Naomi wants pasta. With a sauce.
With pesto. Yes, a protein, honey, a protein. And I used to always tease him because when we were living together, I realized the extent to which, you know, when you're dating and the stuff you just see a couple times a week, and then you start living with someone, you're like, oh, you're like this all the time? Like, he eats, I call his meals kindergarten snack, because it will be this random collection of like a handful of nuts, a handful of pretzels. Does that sound like lunch to you?
We all have different baselines. So because we've got different baselines, you know, to each their own. But in the process of joining your lives together, it sounds like I'm sure many couples have to, either they address it covertly or it kind of like goes undiscussed, I guess, right? But it sounds like y'all had taken the time to really invest in learning about what was going to make your relationship work. And how you could cooperate, collaborate, and communicate to figure things out. How, I mean, I'm sure there's, just like any relationship, challenges and rewards to that process. If you're open to sharing what some of those things were as far as what you were navigating. Obviously, the baseline sounds like one of those things. but maybe, you know, if there were any other challenges, share that. And maybe some rewards that came out of that work, too.
I'll go right to the rewards part. I live a better life. I live a better life.
You're living fancy now.
Uh-huh. He done leveled up.
I didn't have to eat yogurt for lunch. I could have had a flatbread. I could have made a meal for myself if I really wanted to. I just was like not that hungry at the moment. But like I'm saying I could have, and I do.
Yes.
And I do.
I will tell you this. Even though we have worked on our financial relationship, we still have separate accounts. Mm-hmm. We don't have a joint couples account.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we just split the bills and money accordingly. You do that, I'll do that.
Yeah, and it's not secretive. We know how much
money
we
have. It's not. It's just more like, it just felt like another thing to maintain and make sure you're putting in. And it was just like, just do what you can do when you can do it. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, auto pay, hook it up, hand the business. But I think yeah, it was learning that. Because this is the thing. If I have the money, I don't mind spending it on my partner, on my friends, right. You know, when I have, it's not a selfishness there.
Exactly.
So if I have it, I'll spend it. I'm not like, you didn't do such and such, right? If I have it, it's more like, if we're going to be a team, I need to know that in a time of stress or crisis, you got my back.
Right.
And that includes financially. You know, we have three pets. Mm-hmm. When one of these animals need a vet appointment, I need to know you can pull out your card and handle the business and like whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of stuff is important to me. And making sure that he's hearing that I don't think he's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
right? And this is not a personal attack as much as a, hey, the way you used to live, we don't live that way no more. And let's,
I mean,
like, you
know, literally for over a decade, I was earning just enough to survive. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult to get over. Mm-hmm. Like the minute you're like, oh, I have to spend more than $20 on a meal. It's like this kind of like,
I don't like spending, like you say, more than 20 meat. I don't like spending more than $100 at a time. Like anything more than $100, I'm like, well, what is this? Is this required? Do I need this? I think we plan it, because I will say, as much as I talk about how I'll spend my money, we've been together almost 13 years and we've very rarely been employed at the same time.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's just a fact. Like, it's usually one of us who has it mm-hmm. coming in and the other person doesn't at that time. And so for that reason, I'm a really big saver. I save a lot of it. I almost like to the point where I don't touch a lot of it. So that then is, you know, mm-hmm. as we get towards the end of the year, that's when I start to get a little loosey goosey. End of the year, I start to do stuff. Cause I'm like, okay, I pretty much know how it's going to shake out tax wise. Right. And you know, I know what I'm doing now, but I tend, and that works for me. Actually, I actually don't mind, you know, having to be, more cautious with my money for months at a time. And then when I know it's going to be okay, or I know, okay, this gig is going to come in mm-hmm. and now we can do it. But it took me a while to get used to that too, because as we've said, it's people who were all about that regular paycheck.
Right.
That was also what was scary for me about jumping into this, was this idea of like, well, how do you learn to deal with mm-hmm. the ups and the downs? It's just like, I don't know. And so it's taken me a few years to learn how to handle that.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a large chunk of grad school calling my bank, begging them to take off an overdraft fee so that my balance would be positive. If that gives you a clue as to like that, like getting emotionally getting over that was the problem.
Yeah. Regardless of what, you know, your financial history is and just relationship with money, whenever we try to change something from one thing to another, it's going to take, you know, some time, energy and effort. But it sounds like we've been putting the work in on both ends to meet each other in the middle, have conversations, be open. And I think that that's maybe the most important piece, because when you don't have clarity and awareness of what's going on for yourselves individually and each other, it's so much easier to blame and for it to turn into a fight. So you're getting ready to become, you know, a married couple, do you think much will change, or do you think it'll kind of stay the same? You know, when you think about kind of, I guess, like legally becoming a married mm-hmm. couple and joining your lives in that way.
I think it's just a continuation mm-hmm. of the work we've been doing. Look, I bought that end table thing back there.
Look at
what do you call that?
That
entry. I bought that entryway table.
And that's from a real store. You really invested some money.
Yeah.
And even I was like, Andy, really? You know, when he showed me that thing, I was like, are you sure this is?
And I said, it's going to revolutionize our entryway. We needed it.
It does make a difference. You know, it's really important.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it did, Naomi.
It's true.
I love it, Andrew. Thank you.
Don't be bringing us on the self podcast and trying to adjudicate matters. Okay. I don't think much will change. I think I like what we have in place. Mm-hmm. I think that we've also had a good, you know, because I think one of the things that does help us in this matter is that we do both have good credit scores, because even if Andy didn't have his money, he made sure to pay them cards, you know, a little bit he could on time.
Okay.
You know, I'm not as concerned about, you know, in getting married, how will that affect? Cause I think we're on the same page that way. Cause that I know can be a tricky little thing of like, oh Lord, I'm signing my name to your miss.
Hey, we are out of debt. We are out of debt before we got married.
Yep.
So you gotta love that.
Well, yeah, we about to pay for this wedding though.
Well,
Lord have mercy. That's the thing. I'm like, this is so hard. I don't understand. Like, it's such a trial by fire that, like, mm-hmm. for a couple, right? You're saying, I love you. Now let's go through this thing where we have to spend so much money and deal
and
with
both
of our
modest wedding.
Wait a minute.
We want a modest wedding.
Yelling. But it's crazy that we've all agreed to go through this as sort of a plan for love, you know. It's like you have to have a wedding. I'm like, why?
Right.
Why?
It's like
why?
The test of the relationship, right? Exactly. Like, let's take it through the ringer, come out on the other side, and see where it lands us. But maybe as one of the strengths, it sounds like, for your relationship, because I think one of the mistakes people make is thinking that, oh, when we get married, then magic is going to happen and like something's going to shift and the world is going to be different. And if you've built a great foundation and you feel really good about what's going on, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Hello. That's the whole key. I mean, it's why when we got engaged, I was like, I want us to go to couples therapy. And again, I said yes. Mm-hmm. I was all in. But I said, okay, if we're going to do this for a lifetime, we got to stop having the same four fights. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I don't want to have this fight 20 years from now.
Right.
So let's figure out the language around it.
And that was the big one. Like, once
the money was
like,
the big one,
I mean, it's not that it's like ever goes away. But, like, we have figured out ways to navigate it at this point.
And I think it really is, you know, I noticed, for instance, for me, the anxiety flares up when, surprise, surprise, neither of us is working, right? Like, when you don't know what's next, it's easy to just get nervous about everything. And so that's when we, you and I get nervous about, it's like, okay, what are you doing? And what are you working on? And what do you have coming in? And, you know, and I think over time, once you start to catch those patterns, it can be a little better. It's kind of like PMS. When I know it's about to come, just disregard everything I say for 3 to 5 days.
There you go.
You know, just knowing in advance, not that, to make any major decisions.
Knowing that makes it easier on my end.
I love that.
little attitude.
For the couples listening or for anyone going into relationships, what would you say as far as tips on how to handle the money conversation with a partner?
Start by talking about what you are, your fears, right? As opposed to going at your partner being like, you're not X, Y, or Z, or you don't do X, Y, or Z. Say, I'm worried about this in my future. And that's how you get that conversation going. That's what I think.
And when your partner does that, don't ball up like an armadillo and emotionally repress everything and then scream.
There you go.
I would say be open. Be open to the be open to the conversation.
Right. Write down what you're worried about. Don't be afraid to share your income, like whatever, like what, you know, if you're far enough in your relationship that this is even an issue, to just say like, this is what I've got. This is what I plan to do with what I got.
Don't respond with anger and be like, I'll deal with it. Just get off my back. Don't do that.
Can you imagine? What a sick, what a sick scenario.
I love it. It's full circle. Now you've given us both sides of the conversation. So either side knows how to proceed with caution. Okay, so you're going into a new season. It sounds like you've created a great foundation, being together almost 13 years and having a great foundation. How do you envision things moving forward? And what do you really feel like you're going to be focused on, you know, as a couple and individually at this point?
I think I find myself, though, currently sort of torn between sort of what I think should be accomplished at this age or at this juncture versus the fact that maybe I'm okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that, like, versus one of the big things is I've been feeling like we should get a house. Not like we should just go get one, but I'm like, that should be the next goal on our list. But at the same time, we live in Los Angeles, a place that is so beyond expensive. Like, I can't even look at those numbers. Like, even if I had the money, I wouldn't want to give it to you because of the principal. You know what I mean? I'd be like, this ain't worth this.
Not to get back into, like, philosophy professor mode, but you have the choice of what your existence is like at every moment. And you have to choose if you want that responsibility.
Deep. Okay. I think that we're all, you know, building towards something, right? And, for example, I feel like I'm very focused on connection and community. And I would call myself at this point a community builder. For y'all, if you had to say what kind of builder you are right now, what kind of builder do you think you would describe yourself as?
A real selfish one. I am a self builder. I am. I will say honestly, because I think what I have been working on is I've had self-loathing for a long time, a lot of second guessing, a lot of fear, a lot of feeling of being an imposter. And my new focus is like, as these good things happen in my life, I want to be able to enjoy them. I need to be able to see when they're here and enjoy them in the moment. And so that's what I'm really trying to build up. Like, not gonna lie, you know, it's not as what's the word, as valuable maybe as building community, but it's certainly, I think, the step I need to take.
No, you know? Self-builder is genius because the community can't exist without each individual, you know what I mean, being built in and of themselves. So self-builder is important. And if that's what for you is the focus, I think 100% you've got to be able to embrace and enjoy in the moment the experiences that you're having, and give yourself credit where it's due instead of thinking it's a fluke or whatever the case may be, you know, that these things are happening because you are skilled, because you are talented, because you are worth it, because you deserve it. So no, don't discredit that. Okay.
Yes. We're going to clip that out. Play that on loop. Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, I needed that.
I was trying to think as you were talking, and I'm like, I'm halfway between you. So obviously community building is really important, but also I am a narcissist. I bounce between concentrating on myself and like doing things for me, writing, you know, trying to like work, get my ego out into the world through works of art,
uh-huh.
Right? Concretize my ego into these works of art, these scripts, these essays.
That's such a bad way to put it. I would call you what type of a builder. I really think you are. Your focus to me, it seems, is that you are trying to build creative works that other people could share in. Because you say it's putting your ego out, but I really think what you're doing is kind of sharing your point of view and trying to find like-minded people.
Mm. That's a nice way of putting it. I always go for the harsh way. Yes, I think that is more true, that I really want to make things that will connect people.
A creative builder.
Yes.
That's what it sounds like. I appreciate y'all because I think that so many couples aren't having the conversations that we just had today that you have been gracious enough to share with us, and that more conversations like this need to happen, even for people that aren't maybe married or in relationships yet. We just need to have more of these conversations. So yes, I just want to express gratitude around you being willing to do so and just showing up in the world as yourselves, because the more that people can show up authentically, it inspires and motivates and mobilizes others to feel okay, to have what you mentioned, right? The validation, like the check mark, like, oh, that person's being themselves. Maybe I can be myself too in a certain way. And so I just want to give you your flowers while I'm here chatting with you
and say thank you.
Oh, that's so nice.
And thank you for giving us this opportunity and being open to hearing us rant and rave. I think this is very valuable because it's so true. I think especially with money, we were trained to be quiet about it. And I think that serves no one. Talking about is what frees you up because you learn, because I think as you said, whether you're in a couple or not, knowing your own wants, knowing your limits, knowing your vision for yourself, it sets you up. It sets you up to have that information.
Self is hosted by me, Jacent Wamala. You can follow me on Instagram at Jacent's Gems for money mindset tips, tricks, and so much more. For Self Financial, Eileen Busing is Head of Communications and Brand. Annie Rue is Content Marketing Manager. And Alexandria Hatchett is Senior Compliance Manager. For Acast Creative, Shante Howell is our Executive Producer. This episode was produced by Ariana Thomas and Shante Howell, with podcast art by Emma Spellacy. And for LWC Studios, Paulina Valesco is Managing Producer, with mixing and sound design by Judy Bell Kamungian. So, what do you think? It's good, right? Whether you're balancing different approaches to finances with a partner, or working on your credit and your mental health on the other side of a messy breakup, money problems are challenging. It's personal and, at times, isolating. But we don't have to go through it alone. Self is a 6-episode original branded series by Self Financial. And if you enjoyed the sneak peek of the Self podcast, go ahead and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts to hear all 6 episodes now.